Hello and welcome to Ag PhD Radio. I'm Darren Hefty.
And I'm Brian Hefty. Thanks for joining us today. Well, today on the show, we're going to get some harvest updates from around the continent. So if you would like to call in and let us know how things are going on your farm, what the crop looks like, we would love to hear from you. Our phone number here is 844-44-AG-PHD. That's 844-442-4743. You can email us, radio@agphd.com, or find us on Twitter, AgPhD Media, Darren Hefty, or Brian Hefty. All right, so we'll try to get to the Ag PhD mailbag just about right away in the show here again. But before we do, I just have to tell you a quick story. Back in, I think it was 2007, Darren and I went down to Brazil. And we were going to go out to see a farmer who was doing dryland rice. Now, Darren and I had never seen dryland rice before. And so we were just kind of curious what it was. Well, anyway, we get out there and the guy's got his combine stopped. Everybody's just stopped. And I just thought, this is the strangest thing, because here we are this fall in October, and I mean, we are pushing as hard as we can to get done with harvest and then get our tillage and fertility work done. There's no stopping. And I just joked with that farmer because I said, you know, I can't believe you're stopped for us, and you know, you're willing to talk and everything else, show us around a little bit. And he goes, in Brazil, every day is the same as the next. If I don't get done today, I'll get done tomorrow. It's all fine. No big deal. And I just thought, man, that'd be fun to not have that constant pressure of the weather. So like right now, for example, we are out combining 26% moisture corn. We've been combining 24 to 26% moisture corn all week and late last week. Now, I don't love harvesting 26% moisture corn. Our dryers are running really slow. We're running through a lot of propane. There's some cost there. But we got to get done, and we've got all this other work to do. And I just look at last fall, where we didn't push it as hard as we could have, and all of a sudden, fall was done, and we didn't get everything ready to go come spring. And I'm not going to say that delayed us much in terms of the spring, but even if it delays us one day, you got to think about every one day, that's not a day at the beginning. That's a day at the end. And so all of a sudden, instead of planting my very last field, and let's call it, I don't know, middle of May, end of May, all of a sudden, if your last field's in June, what did that cost you? You know, I can see it in our operation. A lot of times it's 30, 40 bushels on corn. It's 10 or 20 bushels on soybeans. That's obviously not good. So we're trying to push as hard as we can here in the fall and get everything done. And it's just the two things that I would stress to you, because you may be in the exact same boat that we are on our farm. Number one is safety. And that was one thing that our dad was always real big on, was safety, safety, safety. All the guards are on every PTO shaft, and, you know, I mean, just everything, for the bins to tractors, you name it. Safety, number one. And along with that, we didn't work nights. We didn't work Sundays. Now, occasionally we might break the rule on the Sunday thing, but and certainly we had to when we had livestock. We were out there every morning and every night. But anyway, we didn't push it as hard on Sundays as we did every other day to rest up. And the big thing that he always talked about was, if you aren't well rested, you have way more chance to get hurt. So he said, we don't go 24/7, never have, never will. That was his whole deal. Just didn't want to do it because he was so worried that somebody would get hurt. And he said, you know, if it was just me, that'd be one thing. But when I got kids, when I get other people that are working on the farm, we're just not going to take that chance. So anyway, that was always his philosophy, and we've kind of stuck to that. But it gets pretty tempting at this time of year to say, ooh, rain's coming. Let's run 24 hours. We still don't do it. But we are pushing as hard as we can, and we do harvest a little bit wetter corn. And Darren, you had an interesting thing yesterday about a guy who harvested some wetter corn, and then he came back shortly thereafter, harvested the corn when it was just drier, and how much did he lose? Tell me the story again.
Well, I don't have the numbers right in front of me, Brian, but he was harvesting some really good corn. Maybe it was 280 and harvested at a little bit wetter in the field, took it in the mid to upper 20s. And he just wanted to see this phantom yield loss that everyone is talking about. Is there really more yield if you harvest at 24 or 25% than if you let it dry down? Well, he let the rest of the field dry down to 16%. So he came back, I think it was a couple of weeks later, and it was 16%, or maybe it was 3 weeks. And it was 24 bushels difference, I think, across his farm. He's like, wow, 24 bushels when you figured net bushels after dry down, less when he weighted. And he said there wasn't any breakage, there wasn't any ear droppage, just less corn out there. And it's one of those, I don't know, a lot of farmers think it's just this myth that, I don't know if that's really true. I think the guys who have grain dryers would probably say, you know what, I've got a dryer, I bought propane right this year, I'm going to get out there a little sooner. If you don't have a grain dryer, you don't even have that opportunity. There was another farmer that we were talking with just over the last couple of days here that does not have a dryer. And he's like, I'm just going to have to keep waiting, even though he had some corn that he thought and the stock quality wasn't great on. And I just think you don't want to get yourself in that spot. And I get it. Getting a drying setup is expensive. It's an investment. There's no doubt about that. But it's sure worth it if you need to have an option like you do this year.
Time flies too. Like for our grain dryers, the newest one is over 20 years old now, and the oldest one is probably 30 years old. So I can only assume that our dad, when he bought those, thought, oh my goodness, this is a lot of money. This is a long-term investment. I'm going to hope to get 10, 15 years out of it. And here we are 20 to 30 years later, still using the same things, work great. Now, granted, we made just a few modifications. We've spent a little bit of money, but not much. So, we're using some of the same. Well, we've got a pit auger and a fairly nice pit. Pretty big, and a nice leg there. Well, those things are probably already 15 years old. It seems like yesterday when we put those things in, but time flies. And where I'm going with this is there are a lot of things that can and are long-term investments on your farm. So when you have the ability to buy those things, maybe not this year, but when you have some good years, it's a good time to stick some money into the farm, and the payoff can be great down the road.
Well, especially if you can capture that phantom yield loss. That's a big deal, too. We're going to talk more about that and take harvest updates from across the continent. If you'd like to talk about what's happening on your farm, we'd love to hear from you at 844-44-AG-PHD.
Every farmer knows there are lots of steps to having a perfect season. Don't let your fertilizer plan be the step that trips you up. For over 35 years, AgriLiquid has had the experts and the products that'll help you move closer to your target. No matter when you apply fertilizer, no matter how, you'll hit the bullseye. AgriLiquid can help you increase yields and crop quality. To learn more, go to agriliquid.com. AgriLiquid moves you closer to your target.
Want to cut production costs without losing yield? Brian Ryberg from Buffalo Lake, Minnesota has done just that. Here's his story.
We began using a soil warrior on our farm fall of 2014. We've seen many benefits from better water infiltration, a lot less hours on equipment, fuel, able to reduce our fertilizer side. So it's really simplified our operation.
See what makes Soil Warrior different and better at soilwarrior.com.
A pasture should have two things, grass and cattle. No weeds, no brush. That's why Chaparral Herbicide offers the broadest spectrum weed control available. It controls weeds other products can miss, like buckbrush and Canada thistle. And less weeds and brush in your pastures means more forage, so you spend less on feed. Chaparral also suppresses seed heads, lessening the effects of fescue toxicosis, all while providing season-long residual control. Visit noweedsnobrush.com today and learn more about Chaparral.
As your corn crop grows and the ear begins to form, potassium is at a high demand, almost as high as nitrogen. The same is true for soybeans, with similar high demands of potassium during pod fill. Don't fall behind. Ensure your crop is getting its potassium with Catalyst. Catalyst by Actagrow has been shown to be the best at entering the leaf when compared to other leading potassium products. Visit k-supercharged.com for more information.
Back, you're listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio today. Taking your calls and questions all throughout the show at 844-44-AG-PHD, or you can send us an email, radio@agphd.com, or find us on Twitter, Ag PhD Media, Brian Hefty or Darren Hefty. Let's head up to Saskatchewan with Jake. How you doing today, Jake?
Oh, pretty good. We're back in the field, so we're feeling a little better about things today.
Awesome, awesome. How's harvest coming along for you?
Well, to be honest, it's been a rough go. We started harvesting on the 9th of August, and as of today, we're still not much more than half done. It's been a really wet, cold, and foggy, damp, cloudy harvest. It's just been really tough to make any progress.
Wow. Yeah, that's no fun at all. I would assume quality's probably been lagging as well.
Yeah, at this point, I mean, we've got a lot of spring wheat and durum left out in the fields. At this point, it's pretty much a given that we're dealing with, you know, feed, and it's just a matter of how we can sort of work with the different qualities that we have from some of the stuff we have off to try and meet, you know, some different buyer programs that hopefully are going to come out over the next little while. But yeah, it's not very good, that's for sure.
No, that's no fun. And I think too about just the field work and everything else that you'd love to get done. Wow, if you could have maybe had this done in August, had the weather been good on some of these acres, your odds of getting it done by fall or by the time winter hits are probably pretty slim too.
Yeah, that's a real challenge at this point. I mean, we still got a lot of crop left out in the field, and we've done very little spraying. So, you know, post-harvest weed control is going to be pretty minimal for us this year. So, you know, I mean, I guess we're just going to be relying on getting it done in the spring, and the same thing goes for dealing with all the ruts and the mess that we've created at harvest time this year.
You know, I would assume crop rotation probably might have to change on a few of these acres too.
Yeah, that's something that we're still kind of, you know, we'll be fiddling with that throughout the winter. You know, I mean, we've got some fields that are really wet now. So, you know, do you put lentils on those fields? If you can't get the good post-harvest weed control done, do you put something like that there? Because weed control isn't as good. So, yeah, there's lots of discussions that we're going to have this winter for sure about that.
Yeah, lots of challenges. Been talking with Jake up in Saskatchewan. Jake, really hoping you get some dry weather here and maybe even a little warm-up too. That'd sure help.
Well, the forecast for the first time since like July looks really good. We got some really nice weather here today, and the 10-day forecast looks good, so hopefully it verifies.
Very good. Well, Jake, good luck to you. Thanks for calling. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Let's head down to North Dakota. We've got Jamie with us right now. Jamie, how are you today?
Well, not too bad. It's 60 above out, and there's some sunshine for once. So
there you go.
Nice to see that.
Yeah. Awesome. So what's next on the list for your farm?
Well, hopefully things will dry down or freeze so a guy can, when sunflowers are ready, a guy can get in and get sunflowers done. But I'm thinking right now, it's probably going to have to freeze until we can get in, because I don't think the fields are going to dry out enough to get in. We're just going to make a mess of the fields and stuff.
So talk to us about the rain, snow. How much did you get of each here leading into this?
Well, we kind of missed out on the snow further east. You know, they've had 30 inches or what I've heard and stuff. But I think we here at the Dickinson area, probably 2 inches, I suppose, was about all we got. But I mean, this fall for rain and everything, I know some people north of Dickinson, they've had anywhere from 12 to 13 inches of rain this fall.
Wow, in western South Dakota, that's
kind of
crazy.
That's kind of what we get in a year. And
yes, and
they've had that in a month. So it's wet. I mean, very, very wet. When you're out checking cows and you see there's water sitting on the prairie and you're digging up the prairie from just a four-wheeler and stuff driving around, you know it's wet.
So you said sunflowers will be the next thing up. Have you started on any harvest at all? Did you get anything out before that snow came through?
As far as the wheat goes, I got 40 acres in or cut before we got all the before we started getting a bunch of that rain and stuff. Other than that, everything else as far as the wheat harvest was, I'm going to say probably 80% of the guys around here, it's all shot. I mean, with the snow that come, wheat's laying on the ground. I talked to a guy this morning, he's got 1,000 acres to go yet, and he doesn't know what he's going to do. I said, well, I says, if it was me, I said, I would leave it lay. I says, it's not worth taking a $200,000 combine out there and go play in the mud and mud your combine up for wheat when we both know it's going to be feed, because it's sprouted. There's no quality there. The quality's all gone.
No, it's just been a disaster on the wheat harvest, no doubt about that. What do the soybeans look like? How did they hold up, Jamie, with the snow and the rain?
I don't have any. I haven't really talked to anybody. My brother-in-law's got some soybeans. He's up south of Williston. He was going to try and get in the next day or two here to see if he can get them combined and stuff. But he says they're kind of laying over a little bit. But they didn't have up there. He didn't have no snow.
Okay.
Where we had a couple inches. He didn't have any.
Yeah, I've sure seen enough.
Maybe they'll be okay.
Seen enough pictures of North Dakota soybeans underneath snow drifts. It's not good. Yeah. A little bit further east from you, I know that for sure.
Well, and I had heard that there was a post on Facebook that the farmers were asking that the snowmobilers stay off the field.
Oh, wow.
Because there's crop out there. Yeah, there's crop under there, and when they run across with the snowmobile, you know, they're just pushing it down, and you ain't going to get it.
Yeah, that's something you don't really count on most years or having that kind of issue you got to deal with. Well, Jamie, good luck to you. I know this hasn't been an easy harvest so far. Hopefully things dry out. Like you say, we get some sunshine and a little warm weather today. Hopefully that continues.
Well, they're talking 70 tomorrow, so I guess we'll see. Time will tell.
You bet. Well, thanks, Jamie. Good luck.
Okay, thanks.
You know, Brian, we talk about the weather delays, and I look at just some of the jobs we're getting done on our farm, getting field work done, getting fertility out there for next year's crop. I was just speaking with a group of folks today about that, hey, we're harvesting crops. We're taking nutrients off the land. We need to get nutrients back out. But when you get falls like this year and like 2018, that's been a challenge to replenish those soils and put back nutrients that we're going to need to have successful crops going forward. So then the work gets pushed until spring, and boy, spring conditions might not be fit either in some of these areas that have had so much rain.
True. And here's the next problem. We don't pull off the same nutrients off every acre in a year like this year. We have some phenomenal yields, and we have some horrific yields. So if you're not doing variable rate, if you're just going to run the same rate across everything, well, that's not a very efficient way to spend the dollar. So I know on our farm, we're doing more variable rate things. But for example, we're going to spread some manure and chicken litter and compost. Well, those are all going to be just blanket spread. So we're going to have some areas where we put a lot of dollars into it, may not necessarily need those dollars right away. So it's just another thing to be thinking about coming off a year like this year. And probably the biggest thing is I'm thinking an awful lot about drainage. We are talking to so many farmers every day about tiling, getting the drainage taken care of. And, you know, even on our farm, we're going to put some more tile in. Well, we have enough tile in most of our fields for a normal year on moisture, maybe even a little bit above normal. So usually we'll get 22 to 24 inches of total annual precip. Well, last year, and probably this year too, we're going to be at 40 plus. Well, when you start looking at double normal rainfall, a record, so they've kept records in our area for like 130 years. And when it's the most ever, and then the very next year it might beat it, you go, oh my goodness, how could I possibly plan for tile and drainage in those kind of situations? But nevertheless, we're going to be adding a little more tile in some spots just to hopefully help reduce the issues if we have another super wet year like this one again.
All right, we're getting a harvest update from across the continent today. If you'd like to call in, our phone lines are open at 844-44-AG-PHD. Stay tuned.
Your grain bin fans can cost you a lot. High electric bills from running when conditions are not ideal, shrinkage from overdried grain, and spoiled grain all take money out of your pocket. With the Steps GMS app temperature humidity switch, get your bin fans to start making you money. Only run vans when the conditions are right. Eliminate shrink and spoilage in your bins. Deliver grain in top condition at market moisture. When every dollar counts, you need Steps GMS. Contact us today at stepsgms.com.
For generations, your family has given their all to create a farming legacy. The fields now in your care are a heavy responsibility to sustain. You can't control when or how rain falls, but you can ensure your fields remain productive by taking water drainage into your own hands with the SoilMax Gold Digger Tile Plow. SoilMax Tile Plows bring a quick return in dollars, but no ROI is greater than a family's farming future. Let SoilMax ensure your greatest investment continues. Visit SoilMax.com to learn more.
Are you combining around weed patches, waiting for weeds to dry down, or tired of spring burndown failures? Save time, nutrients, and moisture by including a Valor herbicide brand in your fall burndown program. Valor provides excellent residual control of tough weeds, including kochia, marestail, prickly lettuce, dandelion, plus suppression of bromes. Proactive, effective weed resistance management starts in the fall. Get a clean start for your next season with Valor herbicide brands. Always read and follow label directions.
If you're a rancher who's obsessed with keeping your pastures clear, turn to Grazon Next Herbicide. It offers superior broadleaf weed control, so instead of thinking about weeds, you can think about the money you'll save growing more grass and buying less feed. Used early in the season, Grazon Next also provides residual activity that controls newly emerged weed seedlings, giving you season-long control. Start enhancing your land while you protect it. Visit leavetheweedstous.com to learn more about Grazon Next. Always read and follow label directions.
When it comes to my weed control, I know a head start can go a long way. That's why I spray early, so I can keep control all season long with a Roundup Ready Extend crop system, the system that makes the difference. This is my field.
Choose the Roundup Ready Extend crop system for control of more weeds than any other soybean system. Featuring Extendamax herbicide with vapor grip technology to manage tough-to-control weeds, including up to 14 days of soil activity, along with the field-proven performance of Roundup Ready to Extend soybeans. Now you have the right tools to extend your weed control and extend your yield with the system that makes the difference. Learn how you can put the system to work in your field when you visit RoundupReadyExtend.com. Extendamax is a restricted-use pesticide. Performance may vary. Always read and follow grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions. Check local regulations for specific requirements in your state.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio today, getting a harvest update from across the continent. Unfortunately, we've started in the north where there is snow and there is a lot of rain. And man, tough conditions. There's no question about it. We've had plenty of moisture here on our farm too. Fortunately, we've been able to go through most of our fields here without creating big issues. And so harvest rolls along for us, But yeah, it's been a challenge in certain areas, no doubt about that. Let's head down to Nebraska here. We've got Chelsea with us right now. Chelsea, how are you doing today?
Hey, I'm great. How are you, Darren?
Good, good. How are things going on your farm?
Well, not too bad. I'm actually sitting in the combine right now cutting soybeans. So
absolutely great. That's fantastic. Day. Yeah. How are the beans running? Are you happy with yields?
No, not this year. They're at least 10% down from last year. And I'd say the overall, 5-year trend average, I'm sure between our wet spring, not a lot of sunlight, just a lot of factors, probably just not a good bean year.
No, it hasn't. You're right about the sunlight too. I was just chatting a little bit ago with a group here, and we were talking about the sunlight, how that's kind of the part that we don't talk about a lot. We say, oh yeah, we had too many rainy days, but that means we had too many cloudy days, and it sure showed up on yields for us as well. All right, so tell me about that then. What are you thinking for next year? Are you going to say, let's roll with more corn, or are you guys thinking you're going to stay with your normal rotation?
No, I think definitely stay with our normal rotation, and we also do a lot of custom harvesting. So we see we're in different hybrids and different field conditions, from clay to sand. So we're realizing it's not just our farm. So we're going to stay with, what we know works, and what works this year may not work next year, but I don't see the need to do an extreme shift.
You know, I think you've got a huge advantage when you get to harvest on other people's farms as well with seed that you didn't plant. So you can see, oh, how does that kind of seed work? And how does this kind of seed work? And how do these farming practices work? Are you seeing big variances in yield? I know in our area, we're seeing some yields that are really disappointing, some that are maybe a little better than average. In general, I would agree with you, though. I think it's off a little bit.
Yep. Yep. Yeah, I'm trying to, my husband and I are both trying to point a finger at that because we have seen that. In fact, a few days ago, I was in 82 bushel beans, and today for the same farmer, I'm back in 65 bushel beans. And they are, one's a Monsanto bean and the other is a Pioneer hybrid, a DuPont. You know, I don't know that plant dates were very similar. He tells me pH was very similar. So, you know, the only difference we're thinking there is it was a hybrid selection. Did the hybrid respond better to, you know, more stress this year, a little more water? Not sure.
Yeah, it's tough. Sometimes tough to point fingers. I know for us, the planting date ended up being a big difference on our farm. But also if we had wet feet, some of our low-lying ground that the plants just had wet feet all year, we were just harvesting a field of corn. And on one end of the farm, you could see it just dropped off by about 30 bushel because we just could never get out of it. We had wet feet all year long.
Right. Yep. Yep. I would agree, you know, and I mean, we're very thankful we have a crop to harvest because not very far north of us, I know, like you've probably seen in the Dakotas and east of us, it's absolutely devastating. It's a year I think a lot of people are ready to put behind them. So, yeah, I guess we're anxious to see what the corn does. We've been into a little bit of wet corn and seeing about strong 20 bushel drag as well where we've been. Test weight's not quite theirs. Corn maybe doesn't look as, thought it looked pretty healthy, but then once we got our frost and stuff, finding some weak stock quality.
Sure. Yeah, well, you're going to see plenty. You're just getting rolling here with harvest, just getting going in a lot of areas of the country and with custom harvesting. Is most of yours done in-state or do you travel state to state too?
It is done in state. We kind of live in the heartland of the row crops here. We do typically go out of state for wheat. We did not this year due to we were planting so late this year in northeast Nebraska. But thankfully, no, we're able to stay within a 60-mile radius of home.
Oh, excellent. Well, yeah, it's not hard to find corn and soybean fields around Nebraska, that's for sure. Well, Chelsea, stay safe this harvest. We really appreciate the call today and hope harvest goes well for you.
Thanks for your time.
You bet.
Yes, thanks. You guys as well. Take care. See ya.
Let's head out to Colorado right now. We got Dusty with us. Dusty, how's it going?
Not too bad.
So what's happening on your farm today?
Well, we're just finally getting rolling out here in northeast Colorado. The dry land corn that maybe didn't get sprayed for spider mites is super dry. And the other dry land corn that's good is just really coming in, drying down in that 15 to 18 range. And those guys are rolling hard.
I bet. That. You know, the
irrigated corn is just starting to come out. Most guys have been working on haled corn, which we had a lot of that kind of off and on out here. The beans are done. They were surprisingly really well for us, what little beans we have out here. But the good irrigated harvest just is still a week away.
Okay, let me go back a second because you said spider mites this year. Were the spider mites worse than normal for you?
It seems like they just keep getting worse every year. I wish I could say it was just this year they were bad. I would say there was pretty localized hot pockets, and they don't necessarily aren't following the same migration patterns that we're seeing like with Western bean, but we are getting more pressure year in and year out. It seems like we are as a whole doing more top sprays to control above ground pests that migrate in over the season.
Yep. Neil, on the spider mites too, are you in a spot where you can still use a Lors ban or a bifenthrin or are you having to use miticides now?
Well, there's a little bit of both. It kind of depends on the grower. Does he want some control, or does he want to do a quick fix? Really depends on the economics of that particular grower at that time.
Sure.
I would say there's a good mix. There's some guys, a couple of different aerial applicators in the neighborhood that are pushing some better products, and we're getting some better control out of it. So I wouldn't say it's widespread yet, but trusting in that technology, I think it's important that we continue to look at alternative modes of action whenever we're dealing with pests.
Yeah, I agree completely on that. Now, you also mentioned hail, and I know in your area there are a lot of guys that we talked to over the summer that said hail was fairly widespread. How about your area? Was it a real big deal for your area, or not too many acres?
There was a hand in the panhandle of Nebraska, just across the state line from our shop. It was really brutal. There were some guys that didn't even get to make corn stalk bales out of their corn. And wow. Then it, a little further south and a little further east, it was pretty bad. As a whole, right here at my house, we were saved. But 6 miles down the road, what was really hard, it didn't affect the corn crop as much as it did the alfalfa crop. There was a lot of alfalfa that was lost that first cutting where we get that big tonnage push and we can kind of set the market with where we're going to be as far as tons. And it was just gone. It just really didn't turn out. That was probably the biggest loss to hail this year in our neck of the woods, was the early hail to alfalfa. It was probably more destructive than the mid-season to the wheat and the corn.
Wow. Well, I'm really sorry to hear that. That's no good. Alfalfa is a pretty valuable crop too. It really stinks to lose it. But glad your farm was spared for the most part here, and looking forward to hearing how the yields come out in that irrigated corn when you get into that as well. Stay safe, Dusty. Really appreciate the call.
Thank you, sir.
Listening to Ag PhD Radio, taking calls and your questions. Taking harvest updates as well at 844-44-AG-PHD. You can also send us an email, radio@agphd.com. We'll be right back after this.
Are you combining around weed patches, waiting for weeds to dry down, or tired of spring burndown failures? Save time, nutrients, and moisture by including a Valor herbicide brand in your fall burndown program. Valor provides excellent residual control of tough weeds, including kochia, marestail, prickly lettuce, dandelion, plus suppression of bromes. Proactive, effective weed resistance management starts in the fall. Get a clean start for your next season with Valor herbicide brands. Always read and follow label directions.
Worried about glyphosate-resistant weeds and grasses in your corn? Unleash the power of new Impact Z herbicide and get the early post-application advantage you've been waiting for. Save $3 per acre when you combine Impact Z with a qualifying insecticide purchase. Go to buy2save3.com for details. Buy2save3 is a service mark, and Impact Z is a trademark owned by Ambac Chemical Corporation. All rights reserved. Impact Z is a restricted-use pesticide. Always read and follow label instructions.
If your fertilizers aren't formulated to maximize your efficiency, if you can't mix all the PK and micros your crop needs into one prescription application, if you have to add products to improve and invigorate your soil biology, then you need to expect more from your fertilizer. With AgroLiquid's advanced technology, you can expect more, a lot more. Make the most of your crop nutrition. With AgroLiquid, to find a crop nutrition expert near you, visit agroliquid.com.
When looking for someone to help with your risk management, a key component to look for is patience. Patience to bring you along in the process at your own speed. Patience to learn about your operation, and patience to not only discuss what strategies may be effective for your plan, but why they would be effective. That's the strength of Grain PhD. I'm Darren Hefty. When you're ready to become more engaged in your risk management, Grain PhD can assist you with that process. Visit grainphd.com to learn more.
We didn't get to the moon by accepting that man can't fly, and we sure didn't get the car by settling for the horse. Progress isn't driven by accepting things as they are. It's driven by asking questions. At Indigo, we're working with farmers to question the entire agriculture system, to reimagine everything from soil to sale. Yeah, we like the big projects. Go to indigoag.com/questions to find out more. Indigo, from questions we grow.
Bean growers continue to see yield loss from white mold across the Midwest this season. To maximize next year's crop, a white mold prevention strategy that includes Contans WG soil fungicide is a must for your farming operation. Applying Contans this fall to reduce the sclerotia in the soil is the most effective way to stop white mold at its source. Start a Contans white mold control strategy this fall or pay for it later in lost yield.
Welcome back to Ag PhD Radio. Brian Hefty here along with my brother Darren. We're getting some harvest updates from around the country. If you'd like to call in, our number here is 844-44-AG-PHD. That's 844-442-4743. Or you can email us radio@agphd.com. So I've heard from a few states and provinces so far. I will just give you a little update on our farm. So we farm in southeast South Dakota. Pretty close to where Iowa, Minnesota, and South Dakota all meet, so we're just inside the South Dakota border, probably 15, 20 miles. And our yields, for what we normally go for, are terrible. Our best corn's probably going to be 250, 245, 250, something like that. So that's down a little bit. Our worst corn, I don't even know. It's going to be horrible, 120 or something bushel corn. Just awful, because like I was saying earlier in the show, even where we have tile, there was so much rain, it was unbelievable. And we're just there is nowhere for it to go after a while. So our worst field is fully patterned tiled, but sitting on the river bottom, and it's right next to a creek. I mean, the water just simply could not get away. So, you know, that happens sometimes. Our dad always used to talk about 1969, that was the worst flooding that South Dakota had ever seen. And if you look at a lot of the records for river height in South Dakota, it was 1969. And what had happened that winter is there was just a ridiculous amount of snow. It melted in a hurry in the spring. And for about 1 week, all the rivers went up. Well, then after that 1 week, they all went way down. And that was it. But this year, we got close to that record this spring. Then it stayed right near that record. Didn't break it, but stayed right near that record for 6 weeks straight. And then this fall, we basically got it again for another 4 to 6 weeks. So, and actually broke the record from 1969 this fall. We had water covering fields this fall. Well, we've only had that one time ever in history, and certainly not as severe as this. So, it's been a real challenge. We're going to lose probably 150 acres of soybeans where it's going to be zero. And I don't think we've ever had a zero before. So it's been frustrating. And on soybeans, our best yield is probably only going to be just shy of 70. Well, we normally average 70. So like I say, and you can hear in just my words here for the last 2 minutes, it's just been a frustrating fall because I thought yields were going to be better, but especially when we got all that rain in early September and everything got flooded out again, all the finish on corn and on beans just didn't happen because everything got super saturated again. And then if you go back to last spring, everything got put in late. Some stuff we kind of mudded in, not terrible, but we still kind of mudded it in. And so you can see out in fields, we've got some really high top ends, but then the problem is the top ends aren't what pays the bills. It's what's the average on the whole farm? Well, our average on the whole farm is going to be down. It's going to be our lowest in quite a while. But as farmers, we got to be optimistic. We got to hope for better things for next year. And so we're doing everything we can to make next year great. So we're already working hard on fertility, tillage, just trying to get everything done that we possibly can here this fall. So hopefully next spring, things go a little bit smoother. All right, let's get to the Ag PhD mailbag.
It's now mailbag time with Brian and Darren.
Brian, here's the first of what I expect to be many compaction-related questions coming up this fall. All right, this one comes from John in southern Minnesota. He said, I've got a 12-row planter, and I'm wondering if I don't need duals for traction, I wonder if I should I'm sorry, if I don't need them for traction, should I still use them to spread out compaction?
Probably.
Would it be better to limit it to one wheel track where I have compaction, or use duals and spread it out to two?
All right. So normally the compaction that's created in a field is done with the first pass. And so when we're talking about, let's say, running a grain cart, you want to try to get back in that same track as much as possible, so there's less total compaction in the whole field. When we're talking about planting, well, you definitely are going all the way across the field and only one time. And so in that case, if it's me, I'm going to try to spread that out if possible. Now, here's another thing that I want you to take a look at. And we'd never done this on our farm before, probably just because it was a lot of work. But anyway, I think it was last week, and Darren, we talked about this. We might have talked about this Monday. But anyway, last week, Darren went with some of our guys, and the guys pulled ears out of each row in 24 rows. So we have two, we were running this spring, two 24-row planters, and I'm not sure which planter they pulled it from. But anyway, pulling the corn, or a bunch of corn ears just going right down the row for 1/1000th of an acre, okay? And then lined up all these ears just on the cement. And you could see by row, oh, wow, some rows are really good. Some rows aren't so good. And my point here is, if you can identify, let's just say, for example, it's your rows in the middle of the planter and those pinch rows, and you go, oh, wow, I'm losing 50 bushels, 80 bushels, 120 bushels per row there. Yeah, I got to change something. That will tell you more than anything. So if it was me right now, if you still have some corn in the field, I'd go do some of that. And you don't have to do it quite as fancy as we did and lay it out. But I really like things that are visual. And when you lay that out on the cement and you put a little tag right underneath by, okay, this row yielded 250. This row yielded 180, and it's right next to it. And you look at that, you go, I got it. I understand. I have to do a better job with my planter. Now, that could have been the tractor. That could have been poor adjustment on your planter. I mean, there are a lot of things that go with that. So the key is, we're just trying to get every row to have an equal opportunity.
Yep, that's a big deal. So yeah, that's something you'll have to weigh out for your farm as to what you're doing. But the other interesting thing, Brian, too, is running tracks. We get a lot of guys that ask about running tracks versus wheels. Look at the tracks and see how much of that track is actually engaged with the ground. On some of the tracks that I see, depending on the setup and when you got them, they're curled up on the sides. And I think, wow, why wouldn't they want that whole footprint to be down on the ground?
Right.
So anyway, I think you got to use some common sense on all these technologies, and also look at what your tire pressure is and all those things. So lots of different things you can do here to try to reduce your impact on the soil. Thanks for the question. Really appreciate that, John. I got one here, and this one actually I got a little bit ago. It kind of fell through the cracks here, so it's a little bit, it's got a little age to it here, Brian, but this one came from Jason in Eastern Iowa. He said, I'm raising chickpeas on my farm. I started with Spartan Elite Down and was wondering if there are any post-emerge options. Unfortunately, outside of grass options like using a Select or a Post or an Assure, something like that, and check what's labeled for sure. I know there's going to be some differences on some of those, depending on, especially if you're listening in Canada, which of those active ingredients are labeled. But you can spray those grass killers post. You don't really have broadleaf possibilities unless you've got imidazolinone tolerant chickpeas, or basically Clearfield type chickpeas, where you could spray a Raptor over the top. Outside of that, you don't have post-emerge broadleaf options. So getting that good pre down is really important. Just like with soybeans, I would start with a three pre type strategy, and you can use some of the same active ingredients. You could use Sharpen, you could use Prowl, you could use Metribuzin. I believe Valor is labeled as well. So you got several different options there. I would use three of them, and you can't use Sharpen and Valor. You'd have to pick one of those two. But outside of that, pick three of those and get them down. You got to have great weed control, and then use crop rotation to try to get fields that just don't have a whole lot of weed pressure before you start planting chickpeas. Otherwise, you're going to have some trouble out there, because weeds really do hurt chickpea yields big time. And I know we talk about it on corn and soybeans and wheat, but chickpeas just don't seem to handle much weed pressure at all. So make sure you're starting out with three pre's down. If you have some grass escapes, we got some good answers for you. Otherwise, unless you've got a clear field type of chickpea, you're out of luck for broadleaf control. You're just going to have to walk the fields and pull weeds. That's about your only choice. Hey, thanks, Jason. We really appreciate the question. We're getting harvest updates from across the continent today. Our phone lines will be open throughout the show at 844-44-AG-PHD. Getting some feedback on our email box, radio@agphd.com. Going to dive into some more emails here in just a little bit. And you can also find us on Twitter, AgPhD Media, Brian Hefty or Darren Hefty. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Find your full potential and increase your bottom line with branded generic fungicides from Atticus LLC. Fungal diseases can be devastating, but Acadia, Slant, and Talaris 4.5F from Atticus deliver lasting, broad-spectrum fungi control so your soybeans, sugar beets, and dry beans can thrive. Growers across the region count on Atticus for relevant and reliable products that deliver results every time. Ask your local retailer about Atticus products and visit atticusllc.com to learn more. For value-based solutions you can trust, turn to Atticus. Always read and follow label instructions.
No one has to explain stress to a farmer. That's like explaining wind shear to a pilot. Now, Mother Nature stresses corn the way markets, bankers, and politics can stress you. But there's a proven way to reduce stress. With Headline Amp fungicide, you'll see the difference. It decreases stress from disease, drought, hail, and heat, so your corn can focus on what matters most, better yields. Talk to your local rep about Headline Amp fungicide and BASF Plant Health. Always read and follow label directions.
There's a new authority in town. New Authority Supreme Herbicide from FMC combines the best-in-class Group 14 PPO herbicide with the newest Group 15 herbicide for lasting residual control of water hemp, Palmer amaranth, kochia, pigweed, and other tough-resistant weeds. This exclusive liquid premix of single-application chemistries protects your soybeans from pre-plant to harvest. It also protects your bottom line. Authority Supreme Herbicide qualifies for the agronomic and economic incentives of the FMC Freedom Pass program. Rule your soybean fields with more authority than ever before with Authority Supreme Herbicide from FMC. More powerful preventative control isn't on the horizon, it's here. Visit your FMC retailer or fmccrop.com to learn more. Always read and follow all label directions, restrictions, and precautions for use. Authority Supreme Herbicide is not registered for sale or use in California. FMC and Authority are trademarks of FMC Corporation or an affiliate.
We plant corn in Iowa, spray soybeans in Illinois.
We pull calves in Kansas, farrow hogs in Minnesota.
We raise rice in Arkansas, rye in Canada, and wheat everywhere in between.
We farm millions of acres across North America
and build every piece of Case IH equipment.
Built by farmers, for farmers. Case IH. Rethink productivity.
The last thing you want after harvesting your grain is to spoil it before it goes to market. The Grain Temp Guard from Farm Shop MFG is a low-cost bin monitoring solution that tracks temperature and humidity and alerts you when conditions exceed safe thresholds. Visit farmshopmfg.com.
Tired of that old warped poly boom ruining your spray applications? Express Boom from Hypro is a fully assembled stainless steel boom that ensures an even application of chemicals every time. Don't wait another season. Upgrade today. Hypro, helping you spray better.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio today. Taking your calls and agronomic questions at 844-44-AG-PHD. Got an email from Kurt, and he said, on your show today, you mentioned corn loss from letting your corn get too dry in the field. I understand that if you're drying the corn, but when we take it to a feedlot and they shrink it to 15.5% moisture, I think we lose some. What's your opinion on using a shrink percentage to pay for corn? You know, this is what elevators do as well. They'll take corn in and, yep, and they'll have a drying charge, but they'll also have some shrink involved in that. A lot of times, if you go to an elevator, let's just use this as an example. Maybe they charge you 6 cents a point. And they say, yep, it's 6 cents a point. What is that? What are they doing? I mean, obviously they've got some drying cost in there, but they're also looking at shrinking those bushels down from, you know, if you had 280 bushel yield at 30% moisture, well, is it really 280 bushels of corn? No, you got a whole bunch of extra moisture in there.
Right.
So they're trying to shrink that down as well. So are they fair on their shrink? I don't know, Brian. We see a lot of variance in what people take for shrink.
Yep, that's right. So on our farm, how we've always calculated it is 1.3, and that's what our dad always said was actual real. But there are a lot of places that will show 1.4 or 1.5. So what I mean by that is, let's say we're 10 points high in moisture. We figure 1.3 per point. 10 times 1.3 is 13. So we figure 13% off those bushels for shrink. You're going to lose 13% when the grain dries down. Okay, done. But I don't know what this feedlot is charging. If they're charging 1.5 or 1.6 or something, well, yeah, that's probably a little high. I mean, a lot of places will charge 1.4. We, like I was saying, just on our farm, we shrink everything down. We actually shrink it down to 15 just so we know what dry bushels are. And we figure 1.3% shrink. We have found that to be pretty darn close over the years in our trial work.
All right. Thanks for the question. You know, Brian, I had mentioned this earlier, and I had tweeted this out yesterday. So if you want to see this phantom yield loss that we were talking about, you can just go look at my Twitter feed. It's just Darren Hefty. That there is some corn taken out, and this one Steve Johnson put on Twitter. He said they harvested September 18th, yielded 258 at 23% moisture. They waited 26 days later, harvested side by side with no ears or plants down. And they got 235 bushel corn,
dry on
16.3% moisture, and they had 23 bushels they lost to phantom yield loss.
Okay, and so we're figuring dry on both of them, you're saying. Those are dry bushels.
That's what he's saying.
Okay, all right.
Yep, yes.
Yeah, we got to make sure we're always talking apples to apples. Is it wet bushels or is it dry bushels?
No, and he's talking dry.
Yep, all right.
All right, let's get back to the Ag PhD mailbag, and we got an interesting one that came in from Louisiana about a weed that we don't have to deal with, fortunately, Brian, called peppervine or perennial peppervine. The question was, perennial peppervine's growing in my hay fields, can't seem to get rid of it. Can you identify this weed and give me some suggestions on what to spray and how to get it without killing my Bermuda grass fields? You know, that's the challenge, is what are you going to spray? There are a few products that are actually labeled for peppervine, but most of them are going to be in rangeland, pasture, right-of-ways, those kinds of things, but also some for crop. Like, for example, when you look at rangeland, pasture, non-crop, Telar has probably been the best. That is chlorosulfuron. So that would be one choice you could make. In the non-crop areas, we see a lot of the products that are just labeled to kill everything. So like underneath a fence or in a parking lot, those kinds of things. Products like Arsenal, which is imazapyr, have really looked pretty good on perennial peppervine. In fields, though, the only two things that I know that really have any claims on peppervine, 2,4-D is okay. That might be something that you could use in grass hay fields to at least try to suppress it. Maybe you just spot spray here and there where you have it. And certainly you want to get it before it starts producing rhizomes and really taking over the field, since it is a perennial. The other one that's labeled is Pursuit or imazethapyr. That one's labeled on alfalfa and a number of different crops, soybeans, edible beans, those kinds of things. It's okay. It suppresses it, but I don't know that you could be able to spray that in your grass field. So.
Yeah, 2,4-D a lot of times is the weed killer of choice in grass or pasture. Well, what we commonly see is people not using the full labeled rate. They're using an old rate, low rate, and so you got to make sure you're using the full labeled rate. In addition to that, it might take 3 applications per year for a few years to knock out some tough perennial weeds or something that you're having trouble with. And I will also say, not every weed has something that's actually labeled for it. But there are a lot of things that can, as we would often term it, ding them up. Well, when you ding up a weed right before winter, then a lot of times winter can finish it off. So generally speaking, we like to spray in the late summer to early fall, depending on where you're at, before the first killing frost. And that way you'll really damage that weed, even if it's a perennial. And then hopefully winter can finish it off for you.
All right. Thanks for the question. Really appreciate that. Always fun looking at different weeds that we don't have here. Then we feel good. Yeah, I'm glad we don't have that one. That one looks tough.
Right. Where did you say he was from?
Louisiana.
That's what I thought. So he doesn't have the advantage that we do of winter. Now, you might not call winter an advantage. A lot of people don't want to live in these kind of conditions in the winter, but it does some good. It can help kill weeds, insects, and diseases.
All right. Well, there's got to be some silver lining. Okay. I got a couple of questions, Brian, that came in on hemp. I'll let you address those.
Okay, so the first one is, this one is from John in Minnesota. Let's see, I've got to see where the other one is from. All right, so anyway, John from Minnesota asks, are there any mold or fungus issues on hemp, and what kind of planting population do you suggest? All right, first of all, I'm just going to say, I'm no hemp expert, but the little bit that I know, yes, there are a tremendous amount of diseases for hemp, just like there are for most crops. Everything from, and I'll just give you a list of a few things here that popped out to me: gray mold, anthracnose, black mildew, charcoal root rot, many different fusariums, rust, tar spot, just literally dozens of others. So yes, there are a lot of things, and there are a lot of fungicides that can control fungus issues. Now, I don't know that all those or many of those are labeled on hemp, but I'm just trying to say there are fungicides that can kill fungus. All right, and then what kind of planting population do you suggest? Again, I'm no expert in this, but when you read up on hemp, a lot of people talk about 25 to 35 pounds per acre. All right, the next hemp question is Bob from Tennessee. He says, as a new hemp grower with no experience, I'm having trouble finding a way to control weeds, bugs, and mold. Fertilizer recommendations are needed too, since it has to be organic. Today's chemicals seem to be out of the question. Hemp's exploding with new growers in Tennessee and the South. Many farmers are trying to replace tobacco with it. I'm hoping you may have some knowledge you could share. Also, we enjoy your TV show. Thanks. All right. So, Bob, I would just say the number one thing whenever you're going to start talking to me about organic stuff, I'm going to think about overall plant health. And that starts with two things. Number one, drainage. You have to make sure you have fantastic drainage. And I know there is not much drain tile used in Tennessee. If you have a drainage issue, get some drain tile in. That's number one. Number two is fertility. Hemp requires a tremendous amount of fertility. So I would look up, what do you need overall for fertility? And I would look at, how do I get my soil balanced? So we talk about things that are good for all crops all the time here on the show. Do a good job soil testing, and then learn how to read that soil test. And if you want any help with this, we're more than happy to help you. Just send us your soil tests and we'll take a look at them. But we want to get our K way up there. We want to get our phosphorus way up there. We want to make sure we have a good balance of micronutrients in the soil. You do all those things and you're going to be in a lot better shape if you can't use common pesticides.
All right. Well, thanks for those questions. Really appreciate that, Brian. One last thing. Eric down in Kansas, it said Dusty from Colorado was talking about spider mites. He said, what solutions would you guys use if you had a spider mite issue on your farm? You know, Dusty had said spider mites just keep getting worse and worse each year, and I would suspect that we just need to invest a little bit more into solving it with some of the miticides on the market like Zeal and Oberon and others.
Yeah, Comite, Onager. I mean, there are a whole bunch of specific miticides. But when he said, what would you do on our farm? Oh, well, our farm, it's a little different. We can still get control out of both Lorsban and Bifenthrin. Bifenthrin would be like Capture Brigade. So that's what we would use because those products are way less expensive than those other specific miticides.
All right, thanks for all the calls, questions, and feedback today. Really enjoyed the show. Be sure to join us again each weekday for more Ag PhD Radio. Now stay tuned for Rob Sharkey and Shark Farmer Radio.